Hello, I'm Brandon House, and it's been an amazing 2022, thanks largely in part to your support. Would you consider an end-of-the-year contribution to WVWFoundation.com right now? That's WVWFoundation.com. Your end-of-the-year contribution is vital so we can continue to push out free programming. Remember, almost all of my shows are made available for free. Worldview Radio, every day on 60-plus radio stations, Christian radio stations. Plus, is made available on Lindell TV, frankspeech.com. It's available at WVW Broadcast Network or WVWTV.com, worldviewradio.com, brighteon.com, band.video.com, Conservative TV Network. Many, many networks pick up my programs, and I put them out there for free. Why? Because I want people to understand the times through the lens of a Christian worldview. I want to be able to proclaim the truth of a biblical worldview and help people understand the times and know how to think about the issues and how God would have us to respond. Many programs produced by many different organizations today are immediately put behind a paywall. You have to pay to see them. Our programs, I push them out for free. But the bandwidth alone is thousands of dollars a month, not to mention all the IT expense and other expense for producing the shows and the people that work in the control room. We also put on a Sunday night service. Every Sunday night, I put on a biblical worldview service at 8 p.m. Central Time at WVWTV.com/live. I've been doing that every Sunday night since 2015. Your support helps make all of these things possible. Would you consider going right now to WVWFoundation.com and making a contribution? You'll also find our phone number there as well. And that's 901-468-9357. 901-468-9357. You can make a contribution over the phone at 901-468-9357. You'll also find our mailing address there, which is P.O. Box 1690, Collierville, Tennessee, 38027. That's P.O. Box 1690, Collierville, Tennessee, 38027. Remember, I've got Worldview Radio, airs every day, Monday through Friday, 1 to 2 p.m. Central Time. The Worldview Weekend Hour, it's our church service on Sunday night. I have the Worldview Report news broadcast. It's been picked up by 6 or 7 different networks. And then, of course, I have Brandon House Live. That's 90 minutes each and every night. And very soon, we'll be adding Worldview News Sunday. It's a Sunday broadcast. We'll tape it on Friday afternoons and bring you an exclusive Sunday morning news magazine show. I also have already started the Worldview Financial Report. The Worldview Financial Report. Not to mention we have House to House that I host with my wife, Melissa. All kinds of programming for your enjoyment. Free. And again, it's made possible in part because of your partnership with us. So please, don't forget your end-of-the-year contribution at WVWFoundation.com or calling 901-468-9357 or using our mailing address. Thank you so much. It's going to be a great 2023 partnering with you.
This is Brandon House Live. Whether the issue is law, science, economics, history, family, social issues, education, religion, government, or national security, Brannon brings the issues of the day into clear focus through the lens of a Judeo-Christian worldview. And now, here is your host, Brannon Howe.
All right, good evening. Welcome to the broadcast. Glad you are with us. I'm going to be joined tonight by Loie Brunson. You say, who? Have you heard the case, Brunson versus Adams? It looks like it's going to get a hearing before the U.S. Supreme Court right in the new year. It could overturn the 2020 election. No joke. It is huge. The fact that it's even going to be, well, considered is amazing. It's an amazing story, and you're going to hear tonight from Loie Brunson of Brunson versus Adams. We'll go to him in just a moment. Then Ivan Raiklin will join us. There is growing movement by American patriots to, well, compel President Donald Trump to throw his hat into the ring to be the Speaker of the House. You say, well, doesn't he have to be elected to Congress to do that? No. They could appoint, well, any U.S. citizen that's of the age limit required to be Speaker of the House.
What would be the benefit of President Trump becoming Speaker of the House, even if for just a few months, where he continues on his campaign trail? We'll talk tonight with retired commander, Green Beret commander, Ivan Rakin. He'll join us tonight with a list that I've asked him specifically to update for tonight's broadcast. Then we'll be joined by Dr. James Thorpe, the OBGYN that so many of you have come to appreciate in regards to his reporting on what's going on with COVID, COVID shots, infertility, and so much more that's happening. He sees over 8,000 patients a year. He'll join us tonight. And then finally, the esteemed Roger Stone will join us. The deep state, the Biden regime, is refusing to let go of some of the remaining documents that Congress agreed to let go many years ago. What is in the remaining few documents? There was a document dump yesterday, but apparently not too much new was in those files. So what are they holding back? Well, I've studied the JFK assassination since the early 90s in great detail, watching documentaries, reading books. I think perhaps the best book on it to date is that by Roger Stone, the man who killed Kennedy. And, of course, it looks like LBJ was involved, the CIA, the FBI, the mob. And I've been saying for, well, several years now, I believe this country has been run largely by the CIA, the black hats at the CIA, since they murdered a sitting U.S. president, or at least took part in it. It looks as though maybe that's exactly how we've had our elections stolen in America, by a deep state that's heavily influenced by the intelligence community, practicing color revolutions overseas, using technology to steal elections overseas that they thought, well, best benefited America. Did they practice overseas and then finally come back here and do this in America? I've had people that were pretty high up in the intelligence arena retire and tell me every time you say that, you are so over the target, more than you know. But that's all I can say, because if I say more, I could go to jail because of things I was read in on. Well, are we shocked that a government, or at least an agency inside the government, can help or partake in the murder of a sitting president and get away with it? Wouldn't be emboldened to get away with stealing elections? If we have 80 reported FBI officers involved in deciding who sits on Twitter and who does not, what do you think is more important? What's happening at Twitter? Them controlling Twitter, or they're controlling elections? I think controlling Twitter was important to them, but certainly not as important as controlling elections. In other words, if they'll go so far as to fool around with Twitter, the FBI, and who's on and who's not, and who's shadow banned, well, wouldn't they certainly try to go after something far more important, including the elections? So maybe indeed what we're finding out is the final remaining documents aren't coming out, because if they did, the American people would realize we've been living under a sham. They got rid of a sitting president, John F. Kennedy, for many reasons. Ronald Reagan, well, they never expected that. That was not the plan. That set them back by quite a few years with their global governance agenda. And they certainly weren't counting on, well, President Donald Trump. We'll get to some of that tonight with Roger Stone. Joining me now is Lowly Brunson. Sir, welcome to the broadcast. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Hey, great to be here.
Well, I've been thank you for being here. I've been hearing a lot of wonderful things about your case and how remarkable it is. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself before we get into the case.
Sure. My name is Loy, L-O-Y.
L-O-Y. Brunson. Well, they've given me wrong data in there. Sorry.
That's okay. I've been called worse. And I have three brothers. We're the Brunson brothers, and we did a lot of trumpet playing and got on some national TV shows. We got to meet President Reagan. We did Christmas in Washington. And what happened was, we have a brother who's really, really loves legal stuff. And so he decided he wanted to bring a lawsuit. And together as a group, we decided the best thing to do would bring a lawsuit against all those members of Congress that voted against a simple 10-day pause and launch an investigation into the claims and that there were some shenanigans that were taking place. It was a national security breach is what we felt like it was. So that's what the case is based on. It's this case now in front of the Supreme Court, this petition for writ of certiorari. is the most power ever that the Supreme Court has because of this case that I think the Supreme Court ever has had. They have the power with this case to remove a sitting president, vice president, and 385 members of Congress. Now, this case is not about the outcome of the election. It's not about saying that there's fraud that proves that we should change the outcome. It's simply a case where we're saying that there was a major security breach. When 100 witnesses, 100 members of Congress say there needs to be an investigation, and the other members of Congress don't pause for 10 days, but instead charge ahead with certifying electoral vote when there are causes to investigate first to make sure that they are real electoral votes, basically, then they are breaching our national security. So the Supreme Court now has the power, if they choose, to remove and bar permanently from holding office the rest of their life 385 sitting members of Congress, of sitting president and vice president, and bar them from ever holding office again, including Mike Pence, the same. And it's simply say, to simplify it, it's the security breach wouldn't have happened if these people had been doing their job, keeping their oath of office, and the security breach was of such a serious nature that they need to be removed and barred from holding office. Another part of this case is they would have their immunity stripped. All politicians would have their immunity stripped. Article 6 of the Constitution, it's very clear. The wording's very clear. It says, shall be bound by oath to this Constitution. So all of our representatives are supposed to be bound by their oath to this Constitution, but they've given themselves, over the many years, they've given themselves immunity, and this case would strip that immunity and allow the legal ways for people to exercise their First Amendment protected right, which is petition for redress, petition the government for redress of grievances with civil claims. And so this is a multifaceted case. The Supreme Court has it now, and they have the power, like I said, to remove 385 sitting members of Congress, the president, vice president, and bar them from holding office ever again. And this would open up tremendous opportunities for new, honest people to take their places. I have friends that are Democrats, and I say, what is it you really want most from your representatives? And they say the same thing, honesty. They want honest representation. So right now, our representatives are taking an oath that's not binding, it's dishonest. And when that is fixed with this case, then we will have much more honest representation. That's kind of it in a nutshell.
That's a fascinating case. That's why we wanted you on here. First of all, the hearing. Now, they haven't agreed to take the case, correct? What they're holding is a hearing on whether to take the case, correct?
Well, let me clear that up. When we first tried to get this to the Supreme Court, it had not been decided by the 10th Circuit Court yet. We were in the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. Now, you cannot go to the Supreme Court until you have a decision from the final lower court, which in this case was the Circuit Court, the 10th Circuit Court. And so we worked real hard to figure out a way to get to the Supreme Court because they were sitting on it. They wouldn't make a decision. And so we found my brother, the legal genius behind this. He found Rule 11 of the United States Supreme Court, which allows you to send your petition to the court. And if you can convince them it's a national emergency, they will let you bypass the 10th Circuit. Well, they did that. And so, but after we did it, the 10th Circuit found out and they changed and they made a decision. So we had to change our petition. The clerk, we actually were in communication with the clerk's office and we said, hey, you've allowed us to file this petition under Rule 11. And so we actually filed it and they called us and said, we're accepting it. They actually did that. I'm kind of jumping and trying to condense it here for time's sake. And so they actually accepted that. But then after they accepted our Rule 11 petition, which means they're accepting it as a emergency petition, the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals made a decision. So we called the clerk's office and they told us that now that the 10th Circuit had made a decision, we don't need to argue that point. We don't need it in there. So they asked us to take it out. And then they asked us how soon we could get it to them. And my brother said, well, it's going to take about 2 weeks. And they said, well, we'd like you to get it to us sooner. Can you do that? And then they also asked us to include something in there that is not required. And they reminded us that they wanted us to do that. And so we got it in there early. We got it a week early. We sent it on a Thursday. They got it on a Friday. They docketed it on Friday. And it showed that it was filed the day we sent it. And then they notified the U.S. attorneys that they had until November 23rd to file an opposition. They had one opportunity to file an opposition. And so my brother was told by the Supreme Court to send them a an option to sign a waiver waiving their right, which he did. He followed up with a phone call and told them that since we had included their motion to dismiss and also we included our opposition, that maybe they didn't need to file it, because as soon as they say sign a waiver, then we can move, then the Supreme Court can move forward with it in a more expeditious way. And so we waited until the 23rd of November, and they hadn't filed a waiver. They hadn't filed an opposition. And on the 23rd of November, the U.S. attorneys, we looked at the docket, and the U.S. attorneys were no longer representing the 388 defendants. Instead, the United States Solicitor General was representing them, and she was the attorney of record now, and she filed a signed waiver, waiving their right to oppose this before it goes into conference. So when so the next few days after they did that, we saw that the docket was scheduled for January 6th. The conference was scheduled. Now, what conference is the nine justices get together without any interference or any arguing from either side, and they take a vote. They talk about this. They're reviewing it now. They had these distributed weeks ago. So they're reviewing it now, and they go into conference on January 6th, and they vote. And nine votes, if four of the nine votes say we move it forward for a full-blown hearing, which I call a trial, that's really a trial hearing, then if they vote at least four and it moves forward to a full-blown hearing where both sides argue the case and they adjudicate it. But since this is an emergency petition, we've read that the Supreme Court has the full power to completely adjudicate, judge, execute the full complaint, not just reverse a decision or uphold a decision. So because this is an emergency case, they could seal the case and they could have this completely decided before conference. So there you go.
Wow. Wow. Okay. I have so many questions. Now, you're telling me the Supreme Court called you up. The clerk's office, I guess.
Yes.
The Supreme Court calls you up and says, hey, we want this case. We want this case and we need you to get it here faster. Are you serious?
Well, that's basically what they were saying. Now, let me explain to those of you that don't know what the clerk's office is. The clerk of the court is not a clerk of one of the justices. The clerk of the court is Scott Sessions Harris, and for 11 years he was the lead counsel. He was the attorney for the United States Supreme Court with a staff, okay? So it was under his direction that a case analyst was calling and working with us, not only asking us to expedite to get this to them quicker, but actually requesting that we include materials that were not required.
Doesn't that just, I mean, warm your heart? I mean, it gives me a little faith.
Yes.
It warms my heart.
Yes.
And gives me faith that maybe our country isn't lost, that maybe there are some people, Republican, Democrat, Independent, maybe the people on the bench saying, look, we're setting aside party. We're looking at the rule of law. And maybe we are going to save this country. I mean, how many people would ever guess this was going to happen? Did you, Loy?
No, we were so many times discouraged and thinking that it was lost cause. We had spent so much time and work, especially my brother Darren, who just put his heart and time and muscle into this, preparing the documents. And oh, my gosh. And so when he got stuck in the Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals, we were really discouraged. He says, there's nothing we can do. We're stuck. Now, I want to remind people, they probably know this, that's the second lawsuit. I was the plaintiff on the first one. Roland is on the second. Mine is still in court, and it's alive. It hasn't been dismissed yet, and it's identical to Roland's. They're probably waiting to see what the Supreme Court does with this one. But, yeah, we were very discouraged at times, but doors opened up. We were prayerful about this, and we wanted to do the right thing, and these miraculous doors open up, including them asking to get it sooner, helping us with content, and the Solicitor General signing a waiver waiving their right to
oppose
it.
All right, let's stop right there. Stop right there, because that is so odd. Are you – look, I'm not an attorney. Your brother's the attorney. I'm a layperson, but –
Well, he's not an attorney either, but he knows how to do it.
Oh, wow. You guys are smart. Okay. So are you telling me that the Solicitor General is saying we're not going to come in and argue against this? We're not going to come in and oppose up another side?
No, let me explain that. They waived their right to oppose it before conference. Now,
okay.
If it moves out of conference, they can go ahead and argue it in front of the justices. But she may understand that an emergency situation like this, for her to sign that, and who knows what else she's talked to about them. I researched her a little bit, and she has a mind of her own. She does what she wants. She has represented the government before and switched the decision that the government wanted her to take. And on her own, I saw her in a Senate hearing, and the senator was raking her over the coals saying, How is it possible you on your own would switch the decision and go opposite of what the government was asked you to do? Who did you talk to before you did this? She says, I talked to no one. And this senator started asking her names. You didn't talk to so-and-so. You didn't talk to this person or this department. She says, no, no, no. I did it on my own. So we're believing that she is patriotic, and she her conscience is telling her that this is not about anything but strengthening the Constitution, upholding the oath of office. Republicans and Democrats and even the socialists are defendants in this case. It has nothing to do with the outcome of the election. It's simply enforcing the oath of office, and voting against this would be a voting against the Constitution without explaining or interpreting the Constitution. And we are thinking that she is doing the right thing in her heart by signing that waiver. And it would to not sign the waiver would be like going against the Constitution. So we think she did the right thing. We know she did the right thing.
This almost starts sounding like the beginnings of a movie. I mean, I think we got a movie coming out of this. This sounds like something out of Hollywood.
Could be.
I mean, it's fascinating. Yeah. So by not opposing or arguing about it going to conference, that means she's open to it going to the judges and for the judges to sit without any argument from either side and consider it. So that means that...
Well, no. When it goes to the judges, she can argue it, okay? She can argue it. But the fact that she didn't file an opposition to it before it went into conference, she could have asked for an extension. She could have, you know, it's like one more opportunity to keep it from going to conference and to keep it going out of conference.
But I thought
she waived that right.
I thought at conference they didn't have any side presented. It was just them in the room.
Right, they don't. That's right. You have a point there. I was thinking you were talking about the hearing where
right.
she can if it goes to hearing.
Right. So what
so she just
so what she's saying is, I don't mind it going to the nine. I could argue for the nine not to hear it just themselves in the room at conference. I don't mind if the nine hear it in conference just themselves. Let them have it and let them talk about it. Then if they make the decision to hear it formally in the chambers, then she could choose to come forward. But the fact that she
right.
doesn't want to argue, hey, I don't want these nine to hear this and in conference, the fact that she's saying, I'm not going to oppose, that means she obviously wants them to hear it in conference, right?
Well, that's the way we interpret it, but she couldn't argue it in the conference. The only thing she could
right.
do is documents that for them to review and discuss amongst themselves opposing it. And that's what she waived her right to do that, because no one's allowed in conference
right.
except the justices.
But that means they
yeah.
know they all know that the nine, if when they get
yeah.
that in the conference, they know,
yeah.
hey, they didn't oppose us seeing this.
Right. Exactly. Some people argue, well, that she thinks it's such a ridiculous case. Well, then why didn't she just let it expire? Because a few hours later, it would have expired. And they wouldn't have had the right anyway. Why did she take the effort to go ahead and file a waiver? That was a statement. And I think that was a patriotic statement. It was a constitutional statement. And I'm giving her my vote of confidence that she's doing the right thing.
Wow. That, again, I like to think there are people still in our government, because I have friends that have been in the FBI and the CIA and some other agencies, and they were there, and then they were counting down their days to retire, but I slept better at night knowing they were there. So most of them have now retired, and I'm talking in the last few months and years. And so we know there are still good people. We know there's some FBI whistleblowers.
Yeah.
There's still some FBI whistleblowers in there saying, I'm not going to do this. This is a violation of the Constitution. And we've got FBI whistleblowers, and some of them now are on suspension. So we know there are good people stationed throughout our government, and hopefully this is, you know, going to save our country. So let's talk about what happens.
Yeah.
If they choose in conference,
okay.
if they say in conference,
sure.
the nine of them meet, and
right.
they say, okay, we all agree. Well, I mean, how many of them have to agree to take the case?
It only takes four. Only four.
Okay.
If four out of the nine votes, if they have to get six against it for it to stop it, okay? Now, I just want to mention that the three of the justices have already voted in favor of Trump-related which would be very, you know, Trump-related Supreme Court cases. And the three that didn't were appointed by Trump, and maybe that's why they didn't. But things have changed since then. They've all been threatened. Remember Chuck Schumer, I'm going to get you, Kavanaugh. I'm going to get you, Gorsuch. Well, those are two that voted against, but I think they would vote now. So I think we're going
to
get at least a six.
So you got Alito.
Zero, and I think
Alito's going to vote. Alito's going to vote to hear it. Thomas is going to vote.
Oh, sure.
Thomas
yeah.
is going to vote to hear it. Who else?
Roberts.
Roberts will vote to hear
Roberts
it?
Roberts will vote.
You think
Because
so?
He voted in favor. Yeah, he voted in favor of Trump-related lawsuits.
Huh.
And that's a much more difficult of choice than this would be. This is just the Constitution supporting it. This isn't political.
And you
it has
only
nothing
need,
to do with either
you,
party.
And you only need three in favor?
Four.
Four
need
in favor.
Four. So we'd need to get one, either Gorsuch or Barrett or Kavanaugh. I think we got it.
Okay, this fascinating. Okay, now this goes down on January 6th, right?
Yes, but then I want to remind you again, it's an emergency case. They can completely adjudicate the complaint completely before then. They have the right and power to do that if they feel like it's of a national security level that they need to do that. And then what I envision is without it being exposed to the public, the court would order the U.S. Marshal Service to go to the sergeant in arms with a list of names to be stricken from the credential list. So he could, that could happen very easily. So all the defendants' credentials are canceled, and then there could be a new president, or Speaker of the House, or whomever they would decide could, with the executive order, go to the Federal Communications Commission directors and put them on notice and set them aside, and actually have special broadcasting ops from the military to go into the broadcast stations so that they could start broadcasting what is happening in real time to let people know there's nothing happening that's going to be, you know, that's going to hurt them. Everything is good. And then there would be a flood of opportunities for candidates that wanted to replace these vacancies. And that would be a positive push. So I see it's a possible positive thing all the way around. I tell people, if you have a Democrat friend, okay, go ahead.
Do these people then, do we have elections for these people to replace these 385?
Well, yeah, the states would probably
appoint.
Yes, the missing seats, maybe the governors would appoint, but they would have special elections. But now, remember, they've been stripped of their immunity. So a politician going into this would have to realize he is now accountable to the constitutional powerful binding oath, right? So there are people who will lay down their lives for this country, and those are the kind of people that would not be afraid of a binding oath. The others that are, I think, would scatter.
Absolutely.
And disappear.
So, Loy, are you okay? Again, I'm a layperson. You're throwing out so much wonderful
so
information.
Am I.
You're throwing out
I'm
so
a
much
person too.
So much interesting stuff here. So, are you saying that after they have the conference, which they could do this anytime they wanted, really, they don't have to wait till January 6th?
They don't. Yeah, they can completely adjudicate it. Let's say the U.S. Solicitor General goes into a meeting and says, "Hey, this sentence is just about the oath and the Constitution. I don't want to be on the wrong side of history. I'll concede." She could concede.
Okay, and that doesn't so right. So then it doesn't go to a docket, you know, like we normally hear that they're going to the Supreme Court today
no,
is going to hear
it would be
this
completely
case. They just make a decision right then.
Even courts, lower state courts and federal courts have sealed documents and they have sealed situations, especially if it involves a national security risk. Of course they would have it sealed. They wouldn't tell people what they're doing. So that's what I think's happening. I think they're just figuring it all out. And another sign of that is, why would they pick January 6th? For conference, to me, that is a message of love, and a message of support, and a message of, hey, we're the Supreme Court, and we're going to take care of you, America. And otherwise, why would they do that? It could be sort of a provocative thing to. They could set it another date. Why they pick January 6th?
Well, that was my next question.
The press conference.
Yeah, that was my next question. Why they pick January 6th? Do you think you pretty much have already implied, but. Do you think the left overplayed their hand by showing up at the homes of justices and threatening them and all the crazy things they did? Do you think that the progressive Marxist left has overplayed their hand, and even some of the, say, more progressive Supreme Court members now have said, you know what, this is a bridge too far?
Well, and I think it's great that they did, because they've exposed themselves. And now the justices can really make a decision. They make the decision in the right way. They will be the most famous patriot. They will earn a seat. They will earn seats next to George Washington and the founders.
Yeah,
if they
but what
make
I'm
the
saying
right
is,
here.
Do you think the left overplaying their hand by being so violent on the street and showing up at the home of the justices has awakened the justices to the tipping point America is in, and this has maybe caused them to say, we have got to get back to a firm foundation on the law, the rule of law here. We can't have this lawlessness. We've got to assert the rule of law. We don't want the right going off the rails. We don't want the left going off the rails. We've seen too much. We actually have experienced it in our own front lawns, and we've got politicians encouraging them to show up at our house, which is a violation of federal law. They're not allowed to show up at our houses and do this. We have members in Congress implying that this is okay, which should cause them to go, are you serious? I mean, for those who don't know, the U.S. Supreme Court's right there by the U.S. Capitol. I mean, you ought to look over there and say to those guys at the Capitol that are making comments about encouraging this, are you serious? Because we're equal but separate branches, And now you're doing this. So here's a chance for the court to come in and say, we're going to return to the rule of law, law and order, and we are reestablishing our independence as the court. You can't send your thugs to our houses and encourage them to do this and think that somehow you're sending your junkyard dogs to our homes to intimidate us, the court, and somehow put us under your control. We're reasserting our authority, equal but separate. We're not taking this anymore. You think there's anything to that?
I think it's very well said. I don't think I could have said it better. Now, if there's anyone out, I've talked to people, and there are people that don't think anything's going to happen. But the question is, and I think everyone has to answer this to the affirmative, does the Supreme Court right now have the power to do what we just talked about? And the answer is yes, they have the power. We don't know what they're going to do. I think we know what they're going to do, but they definitely have the power to clean house.
So what do you think they're going to do? Okay, we've addressed the issue. So what do you think they're going to do?
I just said it. I think we're going to see.
You really think they're going to do canceled. That?
Yeah, I think that's the smartest thing to do. And we're going to see special broadcast teams go in, and that's what the media is doing is treason, and it's psychological warfare. They have a term for this. Militaries have psyops. That's what they're doing. And I think the justices are smart enough to make this a smooth transition. This could be a really horrible, messy revolution kind of a thing, or it could be a very smooth transition that everyone would benefit from. Let the Democrats produce some honest candidates. Let the Republicans produce some honest candidates to replace these members of Congress. Remember, they were all – a lot of them were like waving the Constitution, saying it was a constitutional duty. I'll tell you, I've never seen so much support of the Constitution in my life from the Democratic display on that hearing. And so here's an opportunity for the Democrats to become more constitutional and the Republicans to be more constitutional by the stripping of their immunity and replacing members of Congress that might have want to exploit the position with members of Congress who are willing to lay down their lives for the Constitution.
All right. So tell me who then becomes president and vice president in this interim. What I mean, again, this is not about redoing the 2020 election. This is about you're saying they violated their oath. So these people are removed. Why is the president and vice president removed? Because they weren't there on the floor. I guess
they participated. They accepted this, these positions, knowing that the investigation was not done. Not,
okay. So
right, exactly.
So who then,
right.
Who becomes the acting president, or what happens? What happens? Are we under military martial law for a period of time, or what? Who's in control?
No, I don't think so. No, the Supreme Court the justices could actually the Congress, the justices could decide that it should be the Speaker of the House, the current Speaker, whoever that might be, or they could say that we need to
Wait a minute.
I probably shouldn't have said that.
You know why I'm laughing, right?
I didn't say that. Yeah, I know why you're laughing.
Our next guest is Ivan Raiklin. Do you know Ivan Raiklin?
I'm sorry, I don't.
He's a retired commander in the Green Beret and a constitutional attorney. He's listening. He's listening right now. Okay.
And well, he could answer that better than I could.
Well, here's why I'm laughing. He's coming on to list all the reasons why Donald Trump should run for Speaker of the House. So if that happens on January 3rd, and this, I mean, again, they could do this before January 3rd.
Yeah,
but if they
do this after
Trump is Speaker of the House, then the Speaker of the House becomes president. That's Trump.
Well, they could also put whoever was president in at the time of the security breach, to go back and
Trump.
And he didn't participate in any shenanigans pushing back against an investigation. So it could happen that way. You know, but it's not about who's going to be president. This lawsuit is not about that. It's just about righting the wrong and securing our national breach so we don't have any more breaches.
So do you think Washington could handle this? Do you think Washington, D.C. and the Joint Chiefs of Staff and everybody in Washington could handle this?
Oh, they might scream and holler, okay? But look at all the positive commotion that would come from those wanting to, with their campaigns and huge campaign dollars, to fill those vacancies. Think about that. And I tell people, I say, if you have Democratic friends that you've always butted heads on and you couldn't come up with something in common, go tell them that you've got a list that they'd probably love to see names that would be removed with this case and vice versa. You've got names you would like to see removed. And they're replaced with fresh new ones that are going to be more honest. So that's a win-win.
Now, do you have a website where people can go and read more about this? Do you guys have a website?
Yeah, Yeah, go to 7discoveries.com. You can actually, for a dollar donation, please just go donate a dollar so we know you're out there supporting us. Go to 7discoveries.com. You can download the full complaint. There are two complaints, but they're identical, even though it has my name on one, my brother's on the other. And also, for $30, you can get an exact perfect bound replica. I mean, we just printed extra ones that the Supreme Court justices are using. It has the stamps of the court showing when it was received and when it was docketed and filed. And also, for $1,000, you can call the 80173 from the site. You can call a number and order a signed copy. So for a gift of $1,000, you can receive a signed copy of the perfect bound petition. And people are doing that. We still have some. We want to print some more. We ran out a little bit. We've got some more coming, and we have a few right now.
And this, of course, helps fund all your cases and everything.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, this has been out of pocket. We've had a little help and from some friends. And attorneys have told us that looking at all the you can see that website. You can see the history of the case and the updates, and it'll show you. We actually sued the Federal Court of Utah and the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals for blocking my case. And they unblocked my case after we did that. And not only did they let me, they filed it for me. They were blocking me. They wouldn't let me file it, but they actually unblocked it and ordered the clerk to issue 388 summonses. That case is still alive. It has not been dismissed yet. So there's a lot of information there.
Don't mess with the Brunson brothers. I guess that's all I can say. My word. Okay, before I can let you go, you're going to keep us posted on updates on this, number one, right?
Of course, yeah. Feel free anytime to call or reach out to me, and we'll, yeah.
Okay, number two, you started out with saying that you met Ronald Reagan, and you did, what did you and your brother do?
Well, my brothers and I are trumpet players. We're the Brunson brothers, and we did some national television shows, one of which was Christmas in Washington. Barbara Mandrell, if those remember who she is. She introduced us, and President Reagan was on the front row. And there was a little meeting. What do you call it? A little,
reception, little reception.
Yeah, a little reception. And my brother even asked, my brother Roland asked President Reagan if he could kiss his wife. And he says, sure. So he gave her a kiss on the cheek.
Okay, so I didn't realize you were a trumpet player. Were you on?
Yeah, the four Brunson players.
Were you on Johnny Carson?
Yes.
All right, back up, boys. Back up, boys.
Here we go. Yeah, that's me. I'm the last one walking in. Say hello, Mr. Carson.
We're here to give you a musical salute on your birthday.
So I'm just finding all this out about you on the air here right now. So you and your brother played the trumpet and everything.
Yeah, he had us come back, and we played a number with the band. And there's kind of a story. Ed McMahon was supposed to bring us back to play a special number we had rehearsed. And Ed McMahon was so – I guess it was so loud it kind of shook his senses, because he didn't say – he didn't have us come back. He says, you want to hear that again? And this was a surprise. Johnny didn't know that we had a number prepared for his birthday. It was a Flight of the Bee arrangement. We had rehearsed with the Tonight Show Band. They gave us a standing ovation during rehearsal. It was amazing. It was a lot of fun. But Ed McMahon was supposed to bring us back, and he kind of blew it. But Johnny found out about us later and had us come back. And then that's a story, too, because Doc says, save your best number for the second number. It's like, you don't do that. When you're on national television, you give your best number. So we played what he wanted us to do, which William Toll Overture was okay, but it wasn't our killer number. We would have knocked his socks off with. So
I know are all, well, how many are in that group? Four?
Four, yeah.
Are you all really brothers?
Yeah, we're brothers, yeah. Arlen, Roland, Darren, and Gaynor. How could we have names like that and not be brothers, right?
Oh, my word.
See, my middle name is Arlen. I go by Loy because my first name is Loy, and I ran for office and I use my first name. So, but it's Arlen, Roland, Darren, Gaynor.
Oh, my word. Are you in
Texas? We have a sister. My sister says, I want you to tell people you have a sister. So, hello, Linnell.
Let me play a little bit of the brothers. Here we go. Listen to this.
Okay.
Go.
Thank you.
Well, I kept waiting for it to get to the end. That's so good. How where was that? What was that all about?
That was, you know what? I think that was the Miss Utah pageant where Charlene Wells won the pageant and became Miss America.
Wow.
We were doing 150 shows of Liberace. You know, we thought that's a clean show. It's a family show. And so they hired us. They paid us to do 150 shows. And so we had a break. And
What you call a regular paycheck, right?
Yeah, you betcha. And Roland, if you watch the William Tell Overture, he does the best impersonation of a horse I've ever heard.
Did you ever play in Branson?
No, never, not we went there. We had some offers, but no, we didn't stay there.
All right. Where's the family all based now? What part of the country?
Utah. My brother Gaynor, the youngest, he says he's playing better than ever. He says he's telling us we better practice because someone's going to want us to play. We're going to be embarrassed if we don't practice.
Well, that was my next question. Are you guys still playing?
Well, you know, we could be. We could. We'll have to start practicing. It would take a good month before we could probably even play one song. But wow. My brother Gaynor has a studio, and he's kicking butt. He says he's playing better than he ever has in his life.
Well,
and so he's encouraging us to start practicing.
Well, the good for him. I bet you we know a lot of the same people if we were to start talking music and the music industry and stuff. But what a fascinating other side to you I did not know until we got on the air right now. So that's the beautiful thing about having a laptop computer plugged into the main system. I can start researching stuff pretty quick and throw it to the air.
Look for Brunson Brothers history on YouTube.
That's what I was just playing from. That's what I was just
history?
Going.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I was screening.
Yeah, watch the beginning of that. There's some pretty funny stuff in. Roland gives Regis Philbin a lesson. It's just hilarious how he tries to get a note. It's pretty funny. He makes some pretty funny comments.
I saw you guys on there with. On there. And this is wait a minute.
And then if you and then we did the Brunson. We created the Brunson. My brothers are just I don't know they. They are pretty creative guys. They get bored, I guess, and they want to do some different stuff. So
here you are. I used to watch this every year, by the way. I didn't miss Christmas in Washington because I always thought it was amazing. Here's Mondrell.
Yeah.
And President Reagan's sitting in the front row, right?
That's right, yeah.
Fascinating. Well, you guys are great, the Brunson Brothers. All right, now we're going to continue following your case. We're going to find out more about your music along the way, but we're going to push people to go to 7discoveries.com, 7discoveries.com, find out more about the case. And, I said last night to somebody, all it's going to take is a couple good court decisions, and it could be morning in America again.
It absolutely could. They have the power to be very heroic justices.
Well, thank you to you and your brother, Lowell. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Pleasure. You too. Look forward to having you back and getting an update.
Let's do it. All right, thank you.
You can count on it. Wow. Great interview.
Thank you.
Great interview and great history there. That's fun. All right, let's be joined now by Ivan Rakin. Ivan, welcome to the program. What'd you think of that, Mr. former commander of the Green Beret and the constitutional attorney? What do you make of that? That's pretty fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah, it was very interesting. I mean, I've been following this case for a good minute. I'm glad he's getting the attention that he deserves. And if he's listening in still, God bless him. I mean, I wish for success. Hopefully I pray that the justices go ahead and make the right decision. But at the end of the day, it's going to be a bold decision that they're going to need to make. One thing that I will like to add that I just thought of as I was listening in before I came on was, why wouldn't the justices, as part of their, you know, deep dive into this on their deliberation, why don't they get access to all that 14,000 hours of tape? And bring in a little bit of more discovery.
You're talking
I know
about
it's premature,
hour,
but
14,000 hours on January 6th, all that missing
footage.
Yeah,
exactly. And then some of the analysis that I've put forward essentially talks about how those that participated in the joint session on January 6th, the quote leaders, were complicit in certifying an illegal election at the federal level. Mikey Pence and Nancy Pelosi, when they didn't even allow for a quorum under the 12th Amendment's two-thirds state quorum requirement.
Wow.
I have done many a podcast about it.
I bet you have. And do we have his website up on the what's your Substack? Is that where you want people to go?
Yeah. Substack is going to probably go into more detail of what we're going to talk about tonight. So ivanraiklin.substack.com. I got some folks looking at my third one to edit, make sure that, you know, everything's spelled properly, and we're going to push it out.
Okay.
But bottom line is, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so let's move this quickly because I went too long with Loeb, but that was so fun I had to keep going and informative. Here we go. Speaker of the House. We got to get a movement. Mike Lindell says you got to get a movement going for people to draft President Trump to run for Speaker of the House. So here we go.
Yeah, so we have Mike Lindell on board. It sounds like you just broke the news right now for me.
Yep.
You have General Flynn yesterday broke the news. He put out a truth, and then we shared it on yesterday's program that he did a podcast basically asking for folks to go ahead and create the movement to push for Speaker Trump. And let's see here. If you can pull that back up, Brandon, if you don't mind.
Yep, go
that
to
document
that graphic
you just had, I think.
Yep.
So let's take a look here. I'm not sure if you can see the whole thing, but bottom line is, in addition to being able to what's known as vacate the chair, so the speaker needs to allow for vacating the chair, meaning if the speaker doesn't do what the people that voted him in to do, one individual, one member of the House can say, you know what, motion to vacate the chair, meaning we're going to vote whether or not you're going to stay a Speaker of the House or not. Okay, so Kevin McCarthy doesn't want to allow that. He wants to maintain Nancy Pelosi's rules. That's unacceptable. That's first and foremost unacceptable. So that disqualifies him as being a Speaker of the House. At a minimum, the Speaker of the House needs to be able to afford that to the conference. So number two, you can see here, Speaker Trump appoints, you know, whoever's going to be the Speaker, appoint the Sergeant at Arms, get all the footage of January 6th in order to be able to get the full totality of the story, similar to what Elon Musk is doing with the Twitter files, right?
Yep.
Now, we just had Twitter files release number 6 today, which clearly, beyond a reasonable doubt, shows that individuals within the FBI, DHS, and possibly DNI's Office of Director of National Intelligence were complicit in violating many folks' First Amendment right, to include my own. I mean, that is stopped from Mike Lindell as of earlier today, but I am still under the Twitter jail based on First Amendment violations of our federal government. So we can get to that. Number two, WHO Act 2.0. It looks like Kevin McCarthy is leaning in that direction. House Un-American Affairs Activity Committee, basically he's appointed, or if he becomes speaker, he's agreed to appoint Mike Gallagher from Wisconsin to head up the China Committee. Essentially go after any references and indications that China has overtaken our government, which they have, and at least the executive branch. So they're going to go ahead and investigate and do nothing. But what we really need is the investigation's already been done. It just needs to be presented for the whole world to see uncensored and then immediately do criminal referrals, not to the federal executive that's captured right now, but to states where we have attorneys general that are willing to prosecute those that are Chinese spies, right?
Yes.
Next up, you got your First Amendment Committee, where we're going to end big tech censorship. Elon Musk is doing a yeoman's work right now at Twitter, but that's only one segment of big tech. We still have to go after Facebook with Zuckerberg. We still have to go after, you know, his subsidiaries, Instagram and WhatsApp. And then also LinkedIn, right? All these are commie-captured platforms that need to be freed, as well as Google, YouTube, et cetera. Next up is, I think, many people's favorite. And last week, a week or two ago now, I was at the hearing or roundtable that Senator Johnson was at. Essentially, you had, you know, Dr. Malone, Dr. Peter McCullough, Pierre Corey, many of these doctors that have been on the at the front lines, to include the military whistleblower, Lieutenant Colonel Teresa Long, showcasing the not only inefficacy and unsafe component of the clot shots and the other emergency use authorized products, but essentially it's worse than that, right? It's basically the death jab for many people.
Right.
So exactly. We need to have a speaker that's going to be bold enough to create a Nuremberg 2.0 committee. I argue it needs to be somewhat of a joint committee hosted by the House, since we have the majority, and then invite other key leaders like Ron Johnson, Senator Rand Paul, to get to the bottom of the origins of the Wuhan flu, which we already know the origins. It was from the, you know, Wuhan Institute of Virology, and then hold those individuals to account. Mike Pence, right, who headed up the COVID task force, the shadow governor, which was Jared Kushner, and then downstream from that we have Anthony Fauci, we have Deborah Birx, and then all the way down to, you know, as this thing's, as we kind of start picking off those at the senior levels, then we would have to go down the row into the Pentagon with Secretary Austin and then General Milley, right? And all the way down with all the commanders that illegally mandated and forced military service members to comply under duress. An illegally mandated emergency use authorized product injection into their body. And then all the way down on the civilian side, down to school boards that tried to illegally mandate those EUAs, right? So that's going to fall into the rubric of that Nuremberg 2.0 committee. And then lastly here, Select Committee on the 2020 election and January 6th aftermath. I think, you know, a great witness coordinator of this particular committee would be a Mike Lindell, where he can essentially showcase everybody that has presented their evidence over the last two cyber symposiums, whether it be in 2021 and then this year, the Truth Summit. A lot of those individuals can be, you know, they can refine all the products and evidence that they've created over the last 2 years to then present to this committee to help in getting that narrative publicly to go from all that censorship that was done by the FBI and DHS to actually showcase what the reality is so we can start remedying that mindset of the nation from TDS to TRS, I like to say, right? Trump derangement syndrome to Trump reinstatement syndrome.
Wow.
There you have it.
There you have it. Okay, so I'm going to pull that down and see if there's anything else I need to play. How about a video? I think I got a video here to play real quick, right?
Yep. And there's a couple other components that specifically apply to the president, President Trump, that we can get to as you're pulling that up. So we talked about holistically how do we get our country back, but then how do we get to the truth as it applies to a duly elected president and him being able to not only rebut but exonerate all the false smears and defamatory activity conducted not only by private institutions such as big media and big tech, but more importantly by those constitutional actors within the executive branch, whether it be Mike Pence, whether it be the Paul Ryans of the world, the Crossfire Hurricane, FBI illegal and, you know, spying on Trump. If he's Speaker of the House, he has the ability to leverage all 30 of his committees across C-SPAN 1, 2, and 3 uncensored to essentially lay out the case to the world of what just happened. And with Elon Musk's disclosures, I mean, it is brilliant. There's so much evidence out there now. You have all the activity that was done by John Durham, or not activity, but there was some, as well as the IG reports. We can kind of package that all together, just like the Democrats wanted to do the Mueller investigation bombshell and the hearings that ended up being a dud. Well, this is going to be pay-per-view TV over the course of maybe several weeks. Again, I like to remind folks, this speaker position that I'm presenting to President Trump is a temporary position in order to reset the nation constitutionally. And then once the truth comes out, maybe it only takes 2.5 weeks, maybe 3 weeks or so, right? Once that occurs, he rebuts everything as it applies to impeachment hoax 1, 2, Mueller investigation, the Crossfire Hurricane, illegal spying, all of it, and then showcases who the actual criminal actors are, such as the impeachment managers in 1 and 2, maybe expel them, right? Then we get to the point where now America sees reality and will now demand his reinstatement. Not only has he, you know, been reinstated to Twitter, but we really need to reinstate his name and what he stood for to the whole country that you and I know and we saw, we witnessed. And I think this would be the most methodical process to do so. And those members of the House, of the 222 Republicans that do not vote for President Trump to be the speaker, I argue that they are complicit in the cover-up, because there's no other reason to not vote for President Trump to be the speaker other than that you are complicit, to be honest.
All right, let's go to this clip by what's this clip we're about to see?
Let's see it. Play it, and I'll tell you.
All right, here we go. Here you go. You ready, guys? Here
oh, yeah. So don't play it yet. You just reminded me. So I want to acknowledge that earlier today on Breitbart did an interview of President Trump. And in that, if you can pull that up, it essentially talks about how he somewhat reendorses McCarthy. And it's done in a manner where he tells the folks that are anti-McCarthy to reconsider and give him a shot, right? The word shot. Well, maybe he already got a clot shot. He doesn't need any more shots. He already had his shot, Mr. President, in 2015 when he actually had to pull out of the speaker's race because of his extramarital transgressions. And now there are way more transgressions that he has to address, and he still hasn't addressed his extramarital transgressions from 2015. He has what you just had up for your video up, which was him receiving and admitting on faux business. I think it was yesterday or the day before on faux business channel. He admitted, again, Kevin McCarthy admitted that he received $2.8 million of Bahamian FTX-linked money into his congressional leadership fund.
All right,
Let me say that again. Foreign money he admitted to receiving. And right, this is the clip.
Here we go.
Both you and Senator McConnell, both your PACs did receive money from this guy. I never received
money from him. I received some money from an individual that worked there as well, but I didn't receive any money from him.
From his lieutenants, in other words.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Lieutenants, in other words, yes. So he received, if you read the bottom there, Kevin McCarthy admits receiving, and the $2.8 million, that, we'll get to the link, but bottom line is FTX Bahamas unit co-CEO Ryan Salome, the one that he was referring to in that video, was the one that transmitted the money to Kevin McCarthy's PAC. So if you click on that Yahoo link in that particular, what you just had up,
yep,
and we pull up the article and look at the headline,
yep,
we can scroll through, right? FTX Bahamas unit paid co-CEO MAGA Republican congressional candidate girlfriend $400,000. That's another story. And you scroll down, and I mean, it's a little small, but bottom line is that first bullet. FTX Digital Markets co-CEO Ryan Salome and failed GOP candidate are in relationship, and then she gets paid $400,000, probably because she brought in that money into be able to fund the Senate McConnell leadership fund and McCarthy's leadership fund. So there you have it, Bahama-based FTX entity.
Wow. Okay, so I got to keep moving because I got one more guest. But before I go, since you're a Green Beret commander retired.
Oh, once again, huh?
Yeah, that's your uniform. Hey, well, if you want me talking about it, take the uniform down. But I do not advise taking down the uniform. I think you should leave the uniform up there, frankly, my friend. But as you know, I watched the Green Berets with John Wayne.
Over the target, right?
Absolutely.
Uniform is over the target. I think there's three bullseyes, if you can see. It's kind of small, but I got three bullseyes right there.
Speaker Trump. Thank you. Last thing.
Mm-hmm. I need people to send videos if they agree with the Speaker Trump plan. Send a 5-10-second clip saying, all I want for Christmas is Speaker Trump. And send the video to SpeakerTrump@Yahoo.com.
SpeakerTrump@Yahoo.com.
All I want for Christmas is Speaker Trump.
All right, SpeakerTrump@Yahoo.com. Okay, now you know I watch the Green Berets with John Wayne about three times a year. I'm about halfway through it right now because I will watch it, then fall asleep at night at 1 or 2 in the morning when I'm done with my work. And then I got to pick it up the next night. I'm getting so old and I work so late. It takes me about 3 days sometimes to get through a good movie. So I'm about halfway through my
You're too busy making movies, Brandon. That's why.
Well, this is true, too. So I'm probably about halfway through my fourth watching of the Green Berets this year. I try to watch it about four times. You have it in a continuous loop, I know, in the office there. But, anyway, there are many good scenes in that movie. I want to play for you what I think is the best scene out of the one of the best scenes out of the Green Berets. All right? Here it is, the John Wayne film. Here we go. Watch this. This is it.
Captured weaponry from Red China. Chi-Com K-50. Chinese communists. SKS Soviet-made carbine. Russian communists. Ammunition. Czechoslovakian-made. Czech communists. No, sir, Mr. Beckworth. It doesn't take a lead weight to fall on me or a hit from one of those weapons.
So the reality is the setup of that is do they really need our help? Do they really need our help for us to get involved over there? And he's talking about, this is the spread of communism around the world. You realize who's helping them there in Vietnam. And he does that scene. That's a great scene.
I got to make a comment on that, Brandon, before you drop me. So that scene right there is at Camp McCall, just outside of Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Spent quite a bit of time there training myself. And that was a demonstration to civilians in the civilian world to showcase what the capabilities are of the Green Berets. And in that, he basically explains why we're doing this. Why is this capability why does it exist within the United States? It's to counter the foreign threat that is coming from communists. In that instance, back then, it was from communist Soviet Union primarily. He also mentions communist China with CHICOM. And I would say that what Russians attempted to do in 2016 with the, you know, quote unquote interference, they didn't. But what they did was an after action review to determine what could have worked better in the United States to be able to disrupt America and create this internal chaos. And they sent that after action report over to Chinese intelligence for them to amplify that skill with their capability to do what's going on over the last 2 years. And it's easier when you have the current resident in the White House doing your bidding.
Absolutely.
So there you have it.
Uh-huh.
So that's why I'm involved. That's one of the main reasons why I'm involved.
Yeah.
Is because I see it, I know it, and we have to figure out the legal path to push back against
it. And let me tell you what this guy, okay, this guy here, he's really smart, as you can tell. He's a constitutional lawyer, former commander of the Green Beret. He's really, really smart and very knowledgeable. How many times now have I had you on? Since I had you on the first time, what, 2 weeks ago? Now I'm having you on a couple times a week, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
So we could have all been enjoying the brilliance of Mr. Ivan Raiklin for a long time. But Mr.
Raiklin, one of these days you're going to get it right, Brandon.
It's my phonics. I just look at your name and my dyslexia, which I do have dyslexia. So now you're picking on a guy with dyslexia. I'm kind of like George W. Bush.
Are you accusing me of ableism?
Yeah, exactly. Anywho, this guy, you know, we would have all been enjoying the brilliance of Mr. Ivan Raiklin. If he had not bothered to bury his resume. So he shows up at CPAC, stands in front of my broadcast booth. I don't know.
For days.
For literally.
For 3 days straight.
No joke. My son's like, this guy keeps standing around the booth. Who is he? I'm like, I have no idea who he is. I have no idea. But do you know how many people show up around the broadcast booth and hang out? We've had guys literally do for 3-4 days straight, just stand there waiting to get an interview. And I'm like, I don't want to interview him, but now I feel so bad for him. Get him over here. And I've done this with people. So that you're standing over there smiling. I'm thinking, I don't know him. I don't even know anything about him. So I find out later after – I didn't interview. I didn't know you. Then I find out he's a former commander, Green Beret. He's a constitutional attorney. And I said, if you had come up to me and said, hey, Mr. House, I'm Ivan Raiklin. I'm a retired commander of the Green Beret and a constitutional attorney. I'd be like, hello, I love the Green Berets. Have you seen the movie by John Wayne? Come on over to the desk. So we would have all been enjoying Mr. Raiklin's brilliance months ago had he not buried the lead that he has this incredible resume.
Or I could have just walked up to you without saying a word and done this.
Well, yeah, but still, anybody can do that. Not everybody has the other resume that you have. But anyway, we've enjoyed getting to know you, and Logan was laughing the other night. He said, can you believe that you could have been interviewing him all this time? I said, hey, it's his fault. It's called burying the lead. He buried the lead. I'm a retired commander of the Green Beret and a constitutional lawyer. And I was like, well, we need to talk. And now here we are.
That's right.
So let me be your PR
We're
guy.
On God's time.
I need to help you with your PR.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. But great job. And we look forward to next
Brandon.
Week.
Yeah.
Give the
We're
email.
We're going every day, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Speaker Trump, that's it. Oh, one last. I forgot. One
the
last
email,
thing. Again.
The email. The
January
email.
January 2nd. January 2nd and the 1st, right after the new year, we need to have a Speaker Trump telethon, just like you did the Thanksgiving telethon.
Right.
We need essentially 24/7, or at least from, you know, whatever, you know, 4 in the morning until midnight, because, you know, I know you don't work that much. But we need to have speakers on every hour coming on. And I have a list of speakers. I think I've sent this to you via the email.
Why don't we
we actually go and broadcast this and do a collab with Epic, Bannon, all these RSBN.
Let's organize it.
Push it out for the whole country to see what the real reason is for Speaker Trump. And what can be accomplished, and how it's a total checkmate.
All right, let's organize it.
And if it goes viral, I think he's just going to accept the speakership.
All right, let's organize it. Only thing is, you have to come to the Mid-South Studios to co-host it with me.
You got my word.
Okay, we'll be talking.
I'll do.
All right. Thank you,
Excellent.
Sir. Thank you.
All right.
Now, before I'm joined by Roger Stone, I'm going to get in here with Dr. James Thorpe. I even had time to stop and push product and commercials tonight, folks, but you know what they are, so I'm just going to beg you to follow the lower thirds and do it. All right, let's go to Dr. James Thorpe. Dr. Thorpe, welcome to the broadcast. I'm going to have to move fast. How are you doing tonight?
Well, I'm great. I want to salute Commander Ivan Raiklin, and I missed him in Washington, D.C. last week. It broke my heart. And Commander Raiklin, I don't want you, if you're still a listener, I don't want you to feel too bad, because I had to camp out in front of Brannon's office for a week before I got an interview.
That's not true. That's not true. We would have called the police if you were camping out in front of my office. But all right. So, good Dr. Thorpe, tell us what's the latest news. You sent me something this afternoon. Tell me about this.
Well, I'm more interested in what you sent me than what I sent you.
All right. Well, tell our audience what I sent you.
Well, you sent me this horrible, horrible WHO, World Health Organization document. And this James Roguski has done an incredible job. But basically, the International Health Regulations Review Committee, Brannon, has been working for the last 6 months on multiple countries around the world to completely make a one world healthcare system with absolutely zero rights and respect for one's privacy. It's 80 pages, they've completed it. And just to give you a thumbnail sketch of it, you really don't have to read 80 pages. All you have to do is read about 12 words that are crossed out of the old document. And what they crossed out in the old document is in the second line. It's crossed out, and I quote, "with full respect for the dignity, human rights, and fundamental freedoms of person." They scratched that out, and they put in place of that, "based on the principles of equity, inclusivity, coherence, and in accordance with their common but differentiated responsibilities of the state's parties, taking into consideration their social and economic development." That's all you need to know. They took out all the respect of individual rights of world citizens. And in this 80 pages, the previous document that basically is binding, there were 263 times where in that document they said, you know, the WHO may recommend this and we might do this. They changed that with the states shall do this 263 times. So this is a binding document to, in essence, completely steal all the autonomy of every individual and every nation with regard to healthcare decisions on the planet Earth.
And this is all going to be happening in 2023 as they push for it into 2024. And isn't it interesting that we have now a exercise for a catastrophic contagion exercise in October with all the players that did all this before, you know, the 2020, this and 2019. Sounds like they're planning for another pandemic to get everybody scared. And then we'll have this treaty in place to take advantage of it.
Yeah, it's a very, very scary document. It seems like it's right out of the good book, Revelation.
Doesn't it? I found out about it from James Roguski, who I've got to get back on, and I sent this over to you. This is on his Substack. And, I mean, this is really troubling. And there's Article 3. And then he got the downloads. And then he provides 10 reasons to reject this proposed. But bottom line is WHO, that's China. WHO, that's UN. WHO, that's heavily influenced by Bill Gates. And they will end up taking over all of our sovereignty. I mean, if they decide, hey, it's going to be a lockdown, shut businesses, schools, lockdown, the UN gets to decide that. The UN, dominated by the Marxist and the Islamist. The UN that hates Israel. The UN that's saying nothing about Iran, but telling Israel, get rid of your nukes. Israel, who doesn't even talk about whether they have nukes or not. But they don't say anything about Iran. They don't say anything about North Korea too much. Certainly not Iran. They haven't said squat because, again, the UN is dominated by the Marxists and the Islamists. So now the Marxists and Islamists who hate America, they're going to have full authority to shut us down, close our businesses and our schools, and bankrupt us and imprison us in our homes. That's the authority the WHO under their control would have. True or false?
True.
You can't even make this up, could you? No one would believe this if you put this in a movie.
No. And again, anybody that wants to tackle this document, you really don't need to read 80 pages. Read the first two lines.
We'll go back to the first two lines. There they are. You can see where they're crossing all that out. All right. Let me ask you real quick in closing, anything new on the fertility or lack thereof due to the COVID death shots and infertility shots?
It's just getting worse and worse and worse. This is the most egregious violation in the history of humanity, where in my patients, women of reproductive age, pregnant women, preborn and newborn babies, are pushed this genetic experimental therapy. And the numbers, the birth rates all over the world are plummeting. And this is really, really an egregious disaster. And I blame the American Board of OBGYN, the American College of OBGYN, and the Society for Maternal Fetal Medicine. These organizations have totally been compromised. They're corrupt, as are the FDA and the CDC. We need to flush them down the toilet. As JFK said in 1962, we need to shatter them into 1,000 pieces and let them blow into the wind. It's very, very disturbing. We need to get Elon Musk and Brandon House together and Peter McCullough, and we need to get Steve Kirsch to completely take down this ridiculous healthcare system and bring in a new one. If you build it, they will come.
Indeed, and indeed they will, absolutely. Look at this headline. I found this before I went on the air tonight. I've checked it from three or four sources. One of the websites I checked said they had fact-checked this. I don't know if you're familiar with the story. Again, I've seen it on three or four sites tonight. But the report, you have seen this?
Mm-hmm.
So I believe this is a true story here. I mean, I do verify and try to vet stories before we bring them to you folks. I've did that with like three or four sites tonight. One of them said they had fact-checked the story. American tragedy, baby boy dies of massive blood clot after hospital refused non-vax blood transfusion. Now, folks, you'll know that on my Worldview Report, I did report about a family in another country that's had their kid taken from them. He needed heart surgery. The parents weren't opposed to the heart surgery at all. What they wanted was to make sure their child did not receive blood from someone that was vaxxed. And they took their child, and they're doing the heart surgery, and they've taken the parental authority of the parents. Now, these parents, as I read the story, were concerned about their child who needed the surgery, also wanted him to receive non-vaxxed blood. They actually secured non-vaxxed blood, as I read the article, from some folks from church, had it, but then I guess when time came, they couldn't put their hands on it, and the child ended up receiving blood that was vaxxed. And according to the article, the child has now died of blood clots. And, of course, I think what the medical establishment is trying to say, oh, that's not uncommon in this kind of situation. But, again, I haven't had time to read a lot of the story other than what I've told you. Do you want to comment on this?
Well, the baby should have had a postmortem, an autopsy. But as I recall, if my sources are correct, they didn't get one. But if you had given that autopsy to Dr. Ryan Cole, or one of the expert pathologists over in Germany, they could have definitively for certain showed whether there was or was not vaccinated mRNA at the tissue level or spike protein at the tissue level. That, my friend, would have put a nail in the coffin of the vaccine.
Wow. Well, what's your website? Well, I guess you don't have a website, but you are on social media under what? Thorpe, Dr. Thorpe?
James Thorpe, MD, and I'm on Twitter, and I came out swinging with a bang. I got back on there, and I've had like almost 500 posts in the last week.
Good for you. Good for you.
Well, folks, it feels good.
Absolutely. Well, follow him on Twitter. Thanks for being with us, Dr. Thorpe. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Dr. Thorpe joining us, folks. Follow him on Twitter, would you? All right, joining me now, again, I haven't even stopped to plug my pillow products. You see the code there, B66. We're too busy trying to save America, and I sometimes have to remind myself, you got to pay the bills, Brandon, so do that, folks. Go to MyPillow.com, use the promo code B66. Sheets, towels, blankets, pet bed, slippers, sandals. Oh, my word. Do a wide shot, will you? Do a wide shot. Somebody let the mini schnauzer in. Take the lower third down. Somebody let the little schnauzer into the studio tonight along with Delta. Look how sweet they are. Look at that. There you go. There you go. Get your pet bed. MyPillow.com. Use the promo code B66. I got to sell more pet beds than Roger Stone. We have a little competition going here, folks. So, and look how that floor shines. Remember me telling you last night my TV show was delayed for about 5 minutes because they were in here cleaning and waxing the floor? Look at it shine. Woo! All right, there you go. MyPillow.com, promo code B66. All right, joining me now is the Roger Stone. Hello, Roger.
Brandon, great to be with you on this Friday evening.
You too, my friend. Thank you for joining us so late. I know it's much later, and thank Mrs. Stone for allowing us to keep you up so late.
Thank you.
All right, Roger, so a lot of news this week about the dump, the data dump. What do you make of the data dump? There wasn't a whole lot new in there, I understand, and yet why are they holding back the remaining files, and what do you think are in those remaining files?
Yeah, it's a little hard because, as you know, Brandon, it was only dumped about 6 hours ago. There's over 13,000 documents to review. It largely appears to be innocuous. In 1992, the Congress passed a law that said in 2017, all documents pertaining to the Kennedy assassination should be declassified, and only the President of the United States could delay it. President Donald Trump released an enormous number, but held back about 20% of the documents still classified. I asked him about that. He wouldn't comment other than to say, you wouldn't believe it, Rod. You just wouldn't believe it. Now, fast forward to Joe Biden. Joe Biden has yet again held back a substantial number of documents. What they did appear to dump today is fairly innocuous in terms of telling us a bit more about Oswald. But as Tucker Carlson said last night, why are they holding anything back? Why is it not time for the American people to know? Mike Pompeo strongly opposed the Secretary of State and head of the CIA to releasing these documents. Now Joe Biden is releasing them. What are they hiding from the American people? According to Tucker Carlson and his sources, also the sources in the basis of my book, The Man Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ, what they're hiding is the U.S. government's active involvement in the murder of President John F. Kennedy. Robert Kennedy Jr., in a tweet only about an hour ago, confirms the CIA's involvement in a coup d'etat is something our democracy is yet to recover from. I think that kind of spells it out.
Wait a minute. Breaking news. In the last hour, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. tweeted what?
He basically said the CIA was involved in a coup d'etat to murder his uncle. I also believe that they were involved in the murder of his father. You can see that on Twitter. I think it is exactly right. Oswald was both an informant for the FBI, had actually been trained in the Russian language by the CIA. Just think, look at it this way, Brandon. What U.S. government what U.S. citizen defects to the Soviet Union and then easily comes back to the United States? He was working for the company. What they're holding back, I think, is the final chapter that proves that there was actual government involvement in, I hate this word, the conspiracy to kill JFK.
Which means then they also murdered Oswald.
There's no question about that. Again,
so Oswald was likely a patriot. That's what I've believed for years and years and years, that he was dipped and painted as a communist to penetrate. He was probably a patriot, and they set him up, and then they murdered him.
Well, he was, at a minimum, a patsy. He actually says it. I'm a patsy, he says. I didn't shoot anyone. The Warren Commission tells us that Jack Ruby, the man who murdered Lee Harvey Oswald, had, quote, no known associations with organized crime. That is a palpable lie. He's a button man for Carlos Marcello in both Chicago and Cuba. So the House Select Committee on Assassinations in 1992 did completely debunk the Warren Commission, did say that John F. Kennedy was likely the victim of a conspiracy, but then they declined to tell us who was in the conspiracy. So the government themselves have debunked the Warren Commission, and they also set the deadline for the release of these documents today. But once again, Joe Biden has kept the American people in the dark.
So when President Trump said, Roger, you just won't believe what's in there, how does all that work? I mean, do they bring the file to him and he sits at his desk and flips through it and reads it? Or does someone just come and brief him on it? You think he actually reads it himself?
My guess is that he was given a briefing by the Central Intelligence Agency We know that Mike Pompeo was opposed to the release. The excuse they give, Brandon, is that it would expose our sources and methods. That's an absurdity. There's nobody involved 59 years later who is still alive, first of all. And then secondarily, if this exposes their methods and their methods involve the assassination of American president, then we need to know what their methods are, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. Roger, White House photographer Robert Knudsen, what do you know about him?
Cannot say that I'm familiar with him.
Okay. He was a White House photographer that took a lot of photographs. I understand he was a naval officer in his past life, and because he was, as I understand, he was able to qualify to be a current or former naval officer on any boat or vessel with the president. As a White House photographer, he could fulfill both those jobs. I got to know one of his family members many, 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 many years ago and had an in-person conversation that he was brought in to take photographs of the autopsy that night and then took the photographs out of the camera, you know, they did back then, put them in the little black plastic things and hand them to guys in suits. And the family member said he didn't know if he was hanging them to Secret Service, FBI, CIA. He didn't. But those pictures that he took, he never saw again. He testified before the Warren Commission about some things that the family member said was never in the Warren Commission, got struck, and that he wasn't too much, you know, he ended up dying. And some of the family members, you know, the family member expressed to me their concerns that, you know, that maybe his father died, you know, for other reasons. But the point I'm making is I did some research on him recently and see his name being mentioned quite a bit as to autopsies and then stage autopsies. And so as I searched his name, I found several articles about him. And I just didn't know if you knew anything about him, but about a staged autopsy versus a real autopsy. In other words, people being brought into what was a fake autopsy versus what was a real autopsy going on, where they were trying to cover up and make the shot look as though it came from behind when it came from the front.
Yeah, that I think has been established, actually. During the autopsy, you had military officers in the room directing the autopsy. The bullet wound that is in JFK's upper back is moved in the autopsy diagram by Congressman Gerald Ford, a member of the Warren Commission, takes a pencil, changes the autopsy diagram, admits this to the New York Times, by the way, to make it appear that the wound in Kennedy's neck is an entrance wound. A wound from behind, when in fact it's an entry wound from the front. That's just one of the many things we know. Oswald is allegedly has shot a leaky $29 Italian carbine Carcano rifle. Why does he have no powder burns, no nitrate on his chest or on his arm? Jack Ruby, they tell us, has no known association with organized crime. Why, Brandon, would they take the presidential limousine and completely hose it out and clean it up before it's ever been examined immediately after the crime? So the cover-up here is really quite obvious. You can read about it in my book, The Man Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ. I know you're a big fan of the book. You can
absolutely
go to StoneZone.com right now and buy one for Christmas. You get a signed copy, StoneZone.com, at the shop. I'm very proud of it.
Yeah, StoneZone.com, StoneZone.com, The Man Who Killed Kennedy. Have Roger sign it and give it as a Christmas gift, StoneZone.com. It's the premier book. It's about that thick, folks. It's a thick book. I've read and followed this since the early 90s. It's the best book yet. I think Roger's completely figured it out. So what do you think would happen if the American people saw what is in the remaining files? And you believe the remaining files would show that the FBI and the CIA were involved in the assassination of the President of the United States, correct?
Yes. Here's what they would realize. The same people who killed John F. Kennedy are the people who killed Robert F. Kennedy, are the people who took out Richard Nixon, and the people who tried, the heirs of those who tried to take out Donald J. Trump. This is a deep state removal. There's multiple reasons. In other words, the deep state, the military industrial complex, CIA, FBI, Secret Service, they're angry about the Bay of Pigs. They're angry about the Cuban Missile Crisis. They think Kennedy has gone soft on communism. Organized crime, this is payback for the $1 million they gave JFK to help in his reelection, only to be double-crossed by Attorney General Robert Kennedy, who tries to deport Carlos Marcello and Santo Traficante, two of the biggest gangsters of the era. Then, of course, you have Big Texas Oil. They're upset because Kennedy wants to repeal the oil depletion allowance, which would cost them billions more in taxes. John Kennedy wanted either a gold or a silver-backed dollar. Did not want to move to a paper-backed dollar. He'd made enemies of the banks. And, of course, then there's Lyndon Johnson, who is the man with the most to lose. He was, at that point, under federal investigation in the Bobby Baker scandal, in the Billy Solestis scandal. JFK and RFK had begun telling Democrats Johnson would be dumped from the ticket because he was likely to be prosecuted. So he has the motive, the means, and the opportunity. And the point, of course, is that those who say, oh, no, it was the CIA, they're correct. No, it was the mob, they're also correct. No, it was Big Texas Oil, they're also correct. No, it was essentially everyone had a combined interest, but the common factor is Lyndon Baines Johnson. Of course, that's the premise of my book.
Okay, so let me interrupt you. It's StoneZone.com to get the book. Let me ask you this. Who was JFK Jr. murdered?
Yes, absolutely, definitively. So when the FBI stormed my office when I was arrested in the Mueller witch hunt, they took a computer that had the manuscript of a book I had worked on for 5 years. They also took the only existing hard copy of that manuscript, and they took 5 file cabinets of documents that were my original research, all of which cannot be replicated. These were interviews that I had actually conducted on the Cape, clippings and so on. I think an overwhelming case was about to be made that John F. Kennedy Jr. was murdered. Why do I say that? There are multiple witnesses who see his plane explode in the sky. Now, any pilot will tell you when you have an engine problem or a mechanical problem or a weather problem, the plane drifts down and crashes. It does not explode. I believe that there were, in fact, explosives planted in the plane. I make a very circumstantial case that Hillary Clinton, who aspired to the same U.S. Senate seat as John F. Kennedy Jr. was examining, is probably the perp. Can I prove that? No. But I circumstantially have eyewitnesses who say that she told Democrats in New York when they said, well, I like you, Hillary, but I'm waiting for John Kennedy. She said, huh, that'll take care of itself. And 2 weeks later, it did.
So why have they not given you back your files? Have you asked for those computers and files back so that book can come out, right?
The computer was completely destroyed. It was the hard drive was destroyed. The government denies that they ever took any files. They returned an enormous amount of material from me, but they did not return any of that material. St. John Hunt, who is the son of E. Howard Hunt, was the co-author of my book on the Bush crime family, was also the co-author of my book on John Kennedy's murder. He also does not have a copy of the manuscript. I'm afraid the rest of this is lost to history.
You're not going to try to duplicate the 5 years of work?
I don't think it can be duplicated. Most of these witnesses that I interviewed are no longer alive. I had original newspaper clippings that cannot be recovered.
Do you think there's any chance that the coming after you was not about what they said it was, but just to get that information out of your hands?
I think maybe it was a byproduct, maybe an added bonus. They came after me to squeeze me to testify against Trump, which I refused.
Pull his music out a little bit. Oh, so in closing, tell me, who do you think, can you say who you think killed him?
Yes, the Clinton crime family.
Because he was going to run for Senate in New York?
And same U.S. Senate seat that Hillary ultimately ran for. John F. Kennedy was in the way. He was actively exploring a U.S. Senate bid. I think that is the motive, and that's who I think killed him.
And he would have won it too, wouldn't he?
He was very, very popular. He was very charismatic, just like his father. He was evidently quite a guy.
You think he would have run for the White House eventually?
I think that was the plan. He'd also said in numerous occasions that he would have reopened the investigation into his father's murder. By the way, that's what got Robert Kennedy murdered. Although he had gone along with the Warren Commission fiction for a number of years, just before the California primary in 1968, in a college audience, in a Q&A, he is asked, will you reopen the investigation into your brother's death? And he says yes. Exactly 10 days later, he himself was murdered.
Roger Stone, get the book. The Man Who Killed Kennedy makes a great Christmas gift. Roger will sign it for you or your friend. Get it for your loved one, your family member that really loves history. It is the premier book on the Kennedy assassination, The Man Who Killed Kennedy, by Roger Stone at stonezone.com, stonezone.com. Roger, as always, thank you and Merry Christmas.
God bless you and thank you, Brandon.
And Roger can be heard every day right here on Lindell TV at Lindell TV Channel 2 at 4 p.m. Central, and then replayed from the day before on Channel 1 at 3 o'clock Central. Right, Roger?
That is correct. Or just go to StoneZone.live.
Or just go to StoneZone.live. StoneZone.live.
Right.
Thank you, Roger.
Thank you. Good night. Well,
thank you, folks, for watching. Remember, if you like what I do, you like the guest I have, you want to keep the team together, keep the band together, and fund it all, I need your support. MyPillow.com, promo code B66. Also, don't forget about my foundation and your end-of-the-year giving, WVWFoundation.com, WVWFoundation.com. You'll also find emergency freeze-dried food and other resources at WVWTVStore.com, WVWTVStore.com. Talk to you Sunday night, 8 p.m. Central Time, right here, as we continue part three on the convergence of end time events. So we'll talk to you on Sunday night. Actually, I take that back. I will be back here at the news desk tomorrow at around 5 o'clock Central Time. Tomorrow around 4 o'clock Central, actually, is what I'm seeing here, Logan. 4 o'clock Central, somewhere in there. I'll be at the desk and Michael Alvaretti will be joining us from AmFest out of Phoenix. Alvarez, I guess I should practice his name before we go on the air. Michael Alvarez will join us. He's brand new. I just brought him onto the team. You think I'd know his last name by now? I just call him Michael, thankfully. Okay, so anyway, 4 o'clock Central tomorrow, and we'll be broadcasting through the weekend, Saturday afternoon and Sunday and Monday from AmeriFest. Oh, that's the big Charlie Kirk thing. All right, talk to you tomorrow afternoon. Take care.
Worldview Radio and WVW-TV is made possible because of listeners like you. Thank you so much for your tax-deductible contribution that you can make at WVWFoundation.com. That's WVWFoundation.com or by calling 901-825-0652. That's 901-825-0652. You can also send your tax-deductible contribution via check to WVW Foundation, P.O. Box 1690, Collierville, Tennessee 38027. That's again, WVW Foundation, P.O. Box 1690, Collierville, Tennessee 38027. Thank you for helping make possible Worldview Radio and WVW TV broadcasts.